I'm fantasy author Elle Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, August 10th, 2019, and this is episode 27 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week's best thing is kind of a sad but a happy thing. It's Toni Morrison, and not the fact that she died, but the fact that she lived, really, like her legacy, and the fact that my timeline this week was full of images of her and quotes from her and interviews and just a celebration of her life and legacy. And I think it's so amazing how one woman had such an impact, you know, just a profound impact on so many people's lives. And that's really, truly wonderful. You know, her passing is definitely sad, but whenever someone, you know, in their 80s or 90s passes, it's not the same as, you know, feeling like, oh, they didn't get to do everything that they, you know, they could have done. If someone young passes away, it's like she lived a full life. She did everything she came on this earth to do, I think. And I hope that her family and friends feel that way, because she's just touched so many lives. Like, just seeing the outpouring has been amazing. And one of my favorite quotes that I saw this week, I mean, there's so many, you know, but like, it was about being a storyteller. And she says, "You can invent the language to say who you are and what you mean. I'm a teller of stories and therefore an optimist, a believer in the ethical bend of the human heart, a believer in the mind's disgust with fraud and its appetite for truth, a believer in the ferocity of beauty." And just things like that, just came out of her brain on the regular, apparently. I read Beloved when I was in the sixth grade. And I was 10 years old in the sixth grade because I skipped a grade. And I did a book report on Beloved. And that is the end of my recollection of that. I should look in my diaries. I have my like childhood diaries and see, because I don't know what I thought that book was about. I don't know what that book report said. I wish I could find that. I wish I'd still had it. I'm sure, like, it's impossible for someone 10 years old to really grasp Beloved. But at that young age, whatever I got out of it left an imprint, you know. And as an adult, I still don't feel like I'm intelligent enough to really grasp everything that Toni Morrison is putting in her books. So yeah, her life, her legacy, how one woman's art could touch so many is so beautiful. And I think it's why most of us create, like, to have some small piece of that. You know, we're not going to be Pulitzer Prize winners and groundbreaking artists. Everyone can't be that. But everyone can touch someone else. And, you know, when I think about why I'm writing and what I'm trying to get out of my career and why I choose the books and the stories that I want to tell, there's lots of reasons. You know, a lot of it is entertainment and to make someone think about something and to touch someone in some small way. And whenever I feel like I'm doing that, I feel like I'm living my purpose, you know, and it's wonderful. One of the really touching things that I've heard from a reader is that they were in chemo and reading, you know, 4 and 5 books per session, you know, several hours. I don't know how long chemo takes, but it was long enough for her to read 4 or 5 books. And, you know, she wrote me back and she had read 2 of my books and was just really grateful. And I was so glad to know that, you know, that in that kind of situation, people sometimes diminish the value of entertainment. And entertainment keeps us sane, like, especially in this day and time, you know, happy endings help keep us sane and moving forward. And they do that for me. And I know that they do that for other people. So yeah. In the vein of talking about reading books that you might be too young for, I'd wanted to talk about YA. And then it was so funny because Jeffy Kennedy, I think on Thursday, she was talking about the same thing, like specifically science fiction and fantasy writers and her book, you know, being considered YA. And I already planned to talk about this because at the end of last week, I got an email and I was invited to be one of the, to be the YA author guest of honor at a local, not so local, but at a science fiction fantasy con at MarsCon, which is in Williamsburg. And so I got the email and I was like, oh my gosh, someone wants me to be a guest of honor. That's incredibly wonderful. Like, that's a huge honor. It had kind of started being one of my goals. Like, oh, once I realized that being a guest of honor was a thing, I was like, well, I would like to do that too. And so then I get this invitation, but it's for the YA author. They have an author guest of honor and a YA author guest of honor. And so I emailed my agent and I was like, and this is my high compliance, which I talked about last week. I was like, should I decline this? Because I don't technically write YA. Like, my books are shelved as adult fantasy. When I initially wrote them, they were to be new adult fantasy, which never really became a thing. But in the first book, Jesmynda is 19. In the second book, Kiara is 20. And there's open door sex scenes, you know, like, I don't think they're YA. But if you look on Goodreads, they do get shelved as YA. I do get YA bloggers. I've gotten a lot of support, you know, from YA. And there's a lot of crossover, and I understand that. And my agent was like, oh, no, don't decline it. You know, if it's in your budget and if you want to go, definitely do it. It'd be a great opportunity to get, you know, to find new readers and to get the book in front of new people. And I was like, okay. And my high compliance is like, but it's not YA. And so then I asked my writer friends, my mastermind sisters, and they were both like, Leslie, you should do this. Like, you're being ridiculous. YA is just, it's like a shelf. It's a marketing thing. It's, and there are a lot of people who don't believe YA is even a genre, who get upset that YA is considered a genre because it's an age group. I understand why it's kind of a genre, because it's an age group that, you know, there's middle grade. Middle grade is a genre because there's genre conventions, just like there's conventions for romance and there's conventions for mysteries and thrillers. In theory, you know, there's certain topics and themes that young readers, young adult readers, and then middle grade readers, and then children. And so one of the things that Jeffy Kennedy was talking about was how, you know, being YA is fine. It's just that it usually connotes that there's not sex in the books. And we're writing romance and there is sex in the books, or at least open door romance. And you know, I agree with her that, you know, and I'll link to her episode when she talks about this. It was the August 9th episode of her podcast, August 9th, 2019. And for me, you know, I write open door because I always feel cheated with closed door romance. And it's not like for titillation value. It's really character development. You know, I think if you're including sex scenes in your story, then ideally, they should be necessary. They should show the progression of the relationship or the progression of the characters. And I really try to do that. When I can't do that, I don't have the scene. You know, like, it's there for a reason. But also, apparently, there's more sex in YA these days. You know, I used to be a big YA fantasy reader a few years ago, and not so much anymore. I do read some. But and when people say that there's sex in YA now, what exactly do they mean? Like, I know that Sarah J. Maas's A Court of Thorns and Roses got a lot of flack because she has historically been a YA writer. And I don't think this book that she considered it YA or that it was marketed as YA. But because her fan base is a YA fan base, it came to this book. And the series, I think some people were shocked by the amount of sex in it. Now, I haven't read it. I started reading the book. I didn't finish it. So I don't know exactly what the content is. But as I was thinking about this, I went on to one of those like parental sites and looked it up. And it was really interesting that, so teenagers, like both kids and adults were rating the book. And the teenager rating was like, oh, 14 plus, it's fine. And the adult rating was like 17 plus. And I was reading through the comments and all the kids were like, oh, it's not that bad. People say there's a lot of sex and, you know, it's fine. It's not a big deal. And the adults were like, this is smut. This is nothing but smut. Or some adults were like that. And some were like, I would let my 13-year-old read this. You know, it depends on the maturity of the child. And so it was just like a range of opinions. And so in trying to make myself feel better about this, I was like, well, what would parents say? Because people do ask me if, and especially Black women with kids, have been like, you know, can my teenager read this? And usually I'm like, well, how old are they? If it's 16, 17 plus, yeah, I think that's fine. If it's 13, when it was self-published, I was at an event and this girl comes up to me and I had no idea. I can't tell ages of children. And these days children are so big. I mean, I don't know, like it's impossible to tell. So it turned out she was 13, but she was a very mature 13. Like she could have been 17. And she wanted to buy the book. And I was like, well, is your mom here? Because I don't want to get angry emails. And her mom came up and actually found the sex scene in the book. And I showed it to her mom. I was like, if you're comfortable with her reading this, I will sell it to you. I don't have kids and I don't know the mindset. And, you know, every child is different, I'm sure, in terms of their maturity level and what they read. I was reading Beloved at 10 years old. Obviously, my parents, I don't even know if they knew. You know, I think from their perspective, as long as I was reading, it was fine. I also read Stephen King's It in sixth grade and was scarred. So I was reading stuff I didn't need to be reading. My point is, I ended up selling that book to that 13-year-old because the mom was like, oh, it's fine. She reads stuff like this all the time. So yeah, the larger question is though, and the larger issue, I think, that I've seen raised by other authors, especially women science fiction and fantasy authors, whose books that are adult are getting called and labeled YA. And is that because they're women writers? And is that because they are writing a lot of times women main characters with romance threads and themes? And I know that S.A. Chakraborty and Fonda Lee have talked about this on Twitter and other authors. And even C.L. Polk, who apparently in Witchmark, her hero, she said, was 32 years old and was a doctor in medical school. And this book with this 32-year-old protagonist is getting labeled as YA. You know, sometimes it's really like wild. And I think people see a book with a female author and a female protagonist, or I guess a male protagonist, but, and it's called YA. And is that diminishing? You know, there's nothing wrong with YA, but when your book is not that and it gets called that, and it's a consistent thing that seems to be happening to a lot of women authors, then it's something to look at. And so then I was like, oh, well, am I like complicit in this issue? Should, you know, like by accepting this, am I a part of the problem? I've just gone through a lot of thoughts about this. And then, so I was one of someone associated with the conference was doing some video intros and was emailing me about that. And so then they were like, oh yeah, I'm going to bring my kids. And then I was like, ah. So when I was originally asked to be the guest of honor, and I had gone through all these things, I talked to my agent and I talked to my mastermind friends, and I decided to go, you know, to accept. And I accepted it. And I said in the email, you know, technically this book is not YA, although it's received a lot of support and love from the YA community, I think it's really more appropriate for older or mature teens. And I just wanted to make sure that that was clear and get that out there. And they seemed fine with it. You know, it wasn't an issue for them. They just went on about it like, okay, that's great. So it's just up to me to feel more comfortable with it because I'm still a little bit like, are there going to be 12-year-olds coming out trying to read this book? And will their parents be mad? But I think it's, you know, I think the conversation will continue. And I think it is worth taking a look at because the readers are shelving things on Goodreads and bloggers are readers. And so it's not like the industry is saying, oh, women's SFF is got to be YA. Somehow in readers' minds, this is a thing. And I do feel a little strange perpetuating it, but I don't know. I think I it's something I have to kind of come to grips with. I also wonder if it has to do with quote unquote literary merit as opposed to commercial or popular fiction. One thing I noticed when I was at ReaderCon, and because I haven't done a lot of SFF cons before, is that there does seem to be in the SFF community far greater emphasis on awards and status, especially compared to romance. Like in romance, there's the Ritas, and there's other awards like the Emmas for Romance Slam Jam, which is the Black Romance Conference, and you know, Reader's Choice Awards, and there's other kinds of awards, but basically the Ritas. Whereas in SFF, you've got the Hugos and the Nebulas and the Locus, and there might be some others that I don't even know about because I'm not super tuned into that. Like I haven't, and I'm not super tuned into awards in general, but like, just from my observation, it seemed like there was a lot more emphasis on finaling in this or that, contest or award specifically. And publication, you know, I know SFF places a lot of emphasis also on short story publications and which magazines you've been published in. And there's all of these like credentials that you can have that make you kind of elevate you. And yeah, romance isn't like that. And I think because romance embraced self-publishing so much earlier, you know, I still feel like self-publishing is kind of a dirty word in a lot of SFF circles. Because romance writers are on the forefront of marketing, and I'm seeing a lot of SFF writers kind of still apologizing for marketing or thinking that it's, you know, somehow beneath them or it's too corporate to market your work. Very different communities, and it's very interesting to see the differences. And so when you have, perhaps when you have authors with a different kind of mindset. I don't know. Like you see a lot more YA SFF authors doing online promos and pre-order campaigns and marketing. And maybe it's just the people that I see that I'm linked to online because I don't see as much like of that with just like harder core SFF people or even literary SFF people. They're not doing enamel pin pre-order campaigns and win the ARC, you know, giveaways and newsletters. What's that? Again, this is my perception. I could be off about this, but I don't know. So when you have an adult author who is utilizing maybe YA techniques for promotion, then perhaps that is also a reason for that sort of confusion, or not even confusion, just the labeling. Whereas, you know, literary authors will be like, my book is out today, and then nothing until the next book comes out. And then the rest of it is whatever else they're posting about. Straddling the line between romance and fantasy and observing both communities and the differences is really interesting because I kind of don't fit in either. You know, I'm not doing the traditional romance, and I'm not doing the traditional fantasy. And so I am aware of that kind of being in that liminal space puts you just in a unique position that, you know, there are others, like I think Jeffrey Kennedy is doing that exactly. And really living in both worlds, being on the board of CIFWA. I've never joined CIFWA. I've considered it. It used to be my dream. And then Sad Puppies happened. And I was like, whatever. Like groups, you know? Groups always tend to go wrong. But so, yeah, I might consider it again. But I have a very low tolerance for how many groups I can actually participate in and get benefit from and then provide benefit to. So we'll see. In other news, in writing news... Writing update. So after my regrouping with my story, working on book 4 of Earthsinger Chronicles, I think I wrote 12,000 words because I did the character work and I started writing again. It was good. And I wrote through the first act of this one POV. And then I came up to a point where I needed to know some stuff that I didn't know. And I needed to know how to figure out, like, how do I know what I don't know? So I called my brother and I was like, I need help. And so we talked through some stuff and, you know, he's an actor. I did an interview with him in an earlier podcast. He's a great wealth of information for thinking about character. And so he had, like, these are the questions that I have about this character. You know, what do they want? What are they afraid of? Other questions he had from his perspective, which opened me up. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that. And I could do that. And it was just great. It got me going and thinking about specifically what I need to know about these other characters that are going to influence the character that I was writing. Because I came to that wall where they are, they're motivated by an action that someone else takes. And I had to make sure that that action was going to make sense. And then I had my mastermind yesterday, and I had said earlier, like, I need a plot party. Like, I need you guys to help me with this plot. Because I had the plot, but I knew it wasn't right. And so having two other people who are familiar enough with what I've been going through and the work and getting their ideas, and even if their suggestions aren't ultimately what I go with, having those other perspectives just really opened my mind and my brain up to more possibilities, because I do get stuck in certain ways of thinking. And so talking through it with other people, so, so helpful, like super, super vital. So I'm so re-energized now. I'm going to rework the outline and be ready to go, and I'll be good again until I get stuck the next time. But yeah, so I feel like it's going good again. Cross my fingers. Again, also always worried about the schedule, but that's never going to change. So my current goal is to finish the fast draft by the middle of September. Then I'll have a month and a half to clean it up into a readable version and get beta reads in November, which will give me 2 more months to revise after that before it's due in early February. So that is my current goal. It's going to be a little bit aggressive, and we'll see how that works. I do have some events in September and October. Huge thing. So I was invited to go to the Brooklyn Book Festival in September. That's going to be September 22nd. So Terry's in. Shout out to Terry, who asked me to do this. And I had met her before, and I saw her again at ReaderCon. And then she posts, like, who else is going to be on the panel? And it's going to be Catherine Valente, P. Jelly Clark, and N.K. Jemisin, and me. I'm like, why did you put me on this panel? Like, how do I belong there? But super exciting. So if you're going to be in New York on September 22nd, come through. I'll let you go. Yeah, I still am kind of, like, reeling from that. I'm also going to be doing a book launch in Norfolk, Virginia for Whispers of Shadow and Flame, book 2. And it's going to be at the Mies Writer Center, which is the place where I took writing classes there for 2 years. No, 4 years when I lived in Norfolk. I was part of a writer's workshop. It was like an ongoing workshop. And the Mies is really vital to me. It was really one of the, like, as an adult, formalizing my writing. Like, I always wrote, but it was just a lot of random things here and there, and poetry and a story here and there. But when I got married and we moved to Virginia because of my husband's job, and I didn't know anybody and I worked from home, and I saw, you know, an ad for these writing classes, and I was like, I can do that. I can meet people. I can get back in touch with my writing. And that's really the reason that I started, you know, writing more regularly, because there was a workshop of people who, you know, I had turn in my pages, and I was going to get feedback on it. And so I'm doing a book launch there, and I'm also going to teach a class before the book launch, like a one session seminar on fantasy world building. So that'll be October. I should know the date if I'm going to talk about it. October 26th. Then I also have Capclave the weekend before, which is a local DC SFF con. I've got Baltimore Book Festival the weekend after. October is going to be busy, but it's all good stuff because the book comes out and I should be doing stuff. I always feel like I'm not doing enough, but I can do events and feel really comfortable. Although a book launch, I'm going to have to think of some cool stuff to have happen there, because I don't know what we're going to do, but I'll think of something good. Also, if you are on YouTube, I meant to mention this before, I've got conditioner in my hair, so if it looks crazy, it'll be wet for another few hours, and the conditioner will eventually absorb, but I don't know if you can see it or not, but I just thought, like, hey, I'm like clumps of white goo in my hair, that's because I'm conditioning right now. I'm also trying out a new planner or adding a new planner to my planner contingent. If you're a planner person, I've resisted having more than one. Like I use a disc bound planner that I design my own inserts in Illustrator and print them out. And that's been working really well for a couple of, well, the design has been working for a couple of years. It started out in a bullet journal that I would do by hand. I've been using the disc bound planner all this year. And I was at Office Depot or Staples. I always call it Office Depot, but it's a Staples. And of course, I look at the planner aisle. Like usually pre-printed planners don't work for me because I have to be very specific about my stuff. But I had seen a blog post maybe a year ago by Ronnie Lauren talking about using a teacher's lesson plan journal planner thing and incorporating that into her planner contingent. And I saw these lesson planners and I was like, I might try that because as well as the planner was working for me, it was starting to break down and I was starting to get a little fatigued. When I'm very tired, I have to weekly either print out my pages or if I've printed out a bunch, I just take them in and then still fill in the dates and my habit tracker and things like that. And I was a little bit fatigued. And so I didn't even do my August. August snuck up on me because of July, the traveling. So I hadn't done my August layouts. And so I was like, maybe if I like bring in a pre-printed planner to take the weight off of every week. Like some weeks I'm going to have to really plan to death and time block and just get everything done. And some weeks I can just like use a calendar and then just like have my to-do list and it might take the pressure off. So I'm trying this out. And so I'll link to her system. She uses it as a done planner. So as opposed to having like a to-do, like she marks the things that she's done and it gives her a sense of accomplishment. I think I'm going to still use it as a to-do planner, but I like the idea of, so the one I have has, it's Monday through Friday, and then there's 9 columns. And I guess if you have 9 periods and you're planning for those periods, it's your lesson planner. But for the columns, I'm going to use them as buckets. So, and if things to do in different categories of all the things I have to do every day. So I have one for promo, which is basically social media posts, so I can plan those. One for my newsletter, like writing the newsletter, sending the newsletter. One for design. I have to design more swag for book 2 because I want to do a pre-order contest. Sending emails. I have a whole column for the emails I need to send to people. And then there's another 4 columns. Oh, the Erzinger website, which I think I've talked about. I've wanted to have it done like last month and it's not, I've barely started, but in order for me to get it done, I need to plan it. And it's just something that I want to do. Like there's no big call for an Erzinger Chronicles website, but if I have 7 total books in it, like I think having its own little website would be so cool and something I want to do. And then I have another 3 columns for actual like projects for work. And that's 9. So I'm testing this out. We'll see how it works. It does feel nice not to have to do so much every week. Like the bullet journal was great for a while, but designing my layouts every week got to be a lot. And then I spent a lot of time designing them, like taking those from paper and putting them into Adobe Illustrator so that I could print them out every week. And that just streamlined everything. And that was great for a while also. And now this, we're trying it. You know, planner peace is very difficult to obtain. I don't want to always be searching for that perfect system that doesn't exist. Even though I think it does exist. And I am that person who will always be searching for the perfect system. So that's just, I should accept that. So goals for this week, write, stay organized. According to my new planner, which only has Monday and Tuesday planned, but I'm going to send out a newsletter this week, I think on Tuesday. So if you're listening to this on Monday and you're not on my newsletter, please sign up. lpenelope.com/newsletter. And I have emails to send. I'm not going to go through my whole to-do list because that's ridiculous. But mainly writing and, you know, the stuff on my list. Hopefully get, I'm going to try for 2,500 words a day. 5 days a week, and that should get me to where I want to be on my schedule. I could push to 3,000 words a day, but I know I can do 2,500, and it'll be much more satisfying to go over my goal as opposed to just under my goal. That is it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. For episode show notes and to learn more about me and my books, go to lpenelope.com. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and you can check out the video episodes on YouTube. And if you would like to leave a rating or review, I would so appreciate it. Thanks so much. Have a great week and happy reading.